uncomfortable or unsafe walking around campus at night, there's an AMS service dedicated to helping anyone trying to get across campus alone at night. We're SafeWalk, and we have your back. Call us at 604-822-5355 to request a transfer, or check out our website at ams.ubc.ca/safewalk for more information on hours and policies.
I like Star Trek.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome.
I love The Lord of the Rings.
Great.
Yeah. I'm into obscure 1950s atomic monster movies.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles.
We can work with that. Here at the UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society, we accept everyone. We have weekly movies, game nights, and the largest non-academic library at UBC. Come by our club room, 3206D in the Nest. It's a great place to eat lunch, hang out,
and procrastinate.
Check out our Facebook group, UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society, to find out what's going on.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
She's a band. I'm
sick and tired of hearing your band playing on and on and on. Gosh, you're so loud.
Man, I wish we had a safe place to play music.
Yeah, and shows too.
The Safe Amplification Site Society is a non-profit group dedicated to establishing a legal, affordable, all-ages venue for music and arts in Vancouver. For more information or to get involved, check out www.safeamp.org.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. That's a half hour of sketch comedy, and then there will be a White Noise after show where we play some wicked music and we have some chit chat. So joining me to be taking part in that later is Connor Nickelput and Sierra Wiley. How you doing, guys?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Pretty good. Are you, Connor?
Yeah, excited. This is an exciting week for us, I think, as a White Noise team.
Yeah?
Yeah, so for those of you who aren't aware, which I presume is all our listeners, this week we dedicated ourselves to filming two of our sketches that we did. We've put on the air before. We also did in our live show back in December. And our goal is to submit at least one of them for a video sketch festival, Just for Gags. And so we're on a bit of a tight deadline.
Short shorts.
And so, we're trying to take what we've got, turn it into a nicely edited, finalized sketch, submit that, and then see where it goes.
So if we learn how to use a video editor in the next 2 days, it might be all right.
Exactly.
Any listeners that happen to be video editors and really interested in our show, please do apply.
And cheap.
Yeah, that's
if you don't, though, I'll do it and learn a skill.
Yeah, no,
so no pressure.
I think you can do it, Connor. I believe in you.
He spends enough time on the computer. I'm sure he can figure it out.
I've already got the title down.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I don't know how to edit the length of the shot, though, so that might be trouble.
All right. Well, while Connor works out how to use that program, I think it's time for some White Noise.
Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Trump Bathroom Designs. It isn't only our showers that are golden. First up tonight, people are hacking.
"20 seconds, Dan. I'm ready to code as we speak.
Come on, Dan, my husband's in there, and his life insurance policy expired yesterday.
10 seconds.
Nearly there.
5 seconds.
Done.
Phew.
Ah, shit. The keyboard was in French.
My keyboard is always doing that. I couldn't afford to buy a new keyboard, so I just learned French. Next up tonight is an advert.
From the people who brought you DJ Jazzy Jeffersize, Blow Colon Flex, and Who Lattes, comes the new fitness craze, the Outfits Fitness Bootcamp. Get those sickening abs you've been looking for in a matter of weeks using a mixture of backbreaking labor, tuberculosis, and meningitis. We turn you from flab to fab. You get to spend 2 of the longest months of your life living in our exclusive rat-infested cattle sheds, and it comes with a free tote bag. So if you want to fit into your childhood clothes this summer, book now. But don't take our word for it. Here are some people we paid to speak to you.
This is the best boot camp I've ever attended, and I've been to the Gulag!
I was really impressed with how dehumanizing the guards were. They made it extra special.
I just want to go home!
Outfits Fitness Boot Camp still does less damage than CrossFit.
I wouldn't attend a boot camp. Maybe a sandal camp. Next up tonight, a couple discuss their honeymoon.
Oh my god, we're married! Ah!
Oh no, wait, was it you that I married?
Ha ha. Well, what do we do now? Isn't there something people usually do after they get married?
Well, it's a bit too early to have an affair.
No, they go on a honeymoon.
Oh, right. That must be where they have the affair.
Huh. Well, how about this? 2 tickets.
Uh-huh.
1 way to an erotic destination.
I'm horny already.
Sorry. Exotic destination.
Go on.
Of Pluto!
Is that in Quebec?
No.
Pluto? The planet?
Well, it's a little person planet. The only thing is, it'll take the rest of our lives to get there. So it's like a never-ending honeymoon.
How sweet.
I knew you'd love it.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound very enthusiastic. We're going to be pioneers.
I don't want to be a pioneer. I want to be an author.
Hannah, don't be so myopic. You can be an author and a pioneer at the same time.
But who would I be writing for?
Me, yourself, the head scientist, the priest, Gerald.
Who's Gerald?
Just some guy I met in line buying tickets. He's got alopecia, top bloke, and he whittles.
Okay, but I want actual people to read my writing, not just freaks.
But think of it this way. On Pluto, you'll be one of the planet's founding writers. You'll be heralded.
You think?
You'd be mentioned in the same breath as Christopher Columbus.
The explorer?
Explorer, sociopath, whichever title you prefer.
I guess that's something. Something significant.
It is. And this way we'll be able to have an adventure that no one has ever dreamed of before.
I guess.
And it's not like you have any relatives here.
Except Tony.
Yeah, but Tony smells.
Mmm.
And the food will be great. It's going to be catered by Heston Blumenthal.
Heston? Really?
By the end of it, we'll probably be eating parts of the ship. So it will be okay.
Yeah, it will. Hello? Nigel? Where are you? We're taking off in 5 minutes!
Hey, baby, so I made a small mistake. I went to Cape Cod instead of Cape Canaveral. I'm not sure I'm going to make it. Sorry. Have fun! Bye!
I hope they hurry up and decide whether Pluto is a planet or not, because it has a massive impact on my everyday life. Next up tonight, someone's reviewing!
Grace. Power. Efficiency.
The Kitzelstock XXL69 is not only the finest thing to come out of Germany this year, but also the closest thing to an instant orgasm I've ever experienced, since Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. The body is made of carbon fiber and with a gloss finish, making it remarkably light and stain resistant. Believe me, I've tested it. She packs twin turbo 16-ounce V8 engines, but the magnificent thing about her is that she's almost completely silent, which is a first for something coming out of a German dungeon. This machine will evoke a visceral reaction and will make you say things like, "More, Daddy, more." The XXL69 will cost you a pretty 50,000 cents, but it's worth everything. Upper and rear traction control along the shaft allow for smooth maneuverability as you round bends and delicately parallel park into the G-spot. It channels the power of 400 horses, or 4 Terry Crews. With Bluetooth connectivity, you can stream your favorite Pillow Talk bangers while you ride. It even allows you to take calls on the go, perfect for hearing the yearning voice of your long-lost lover or the hollow growl of the naughty chap on the end of the sex line. This baby comes with a highly responsive clutch, so you can decide exactly when you want to put your finger inside the throttle. This is the kind of sex toy you won't want to hide under your bed. Plus, it probably wouldn't fit.
I've never bought a sex toy, unless you count the hollowed out melon under my bed. Next up tonight, the Putins are trying to relax.
Hurry up, honey, or we won't have time for Legally Blonde and Legally Blonde 2.
Sorry, my darling. I was just feeding the pets.
How long does it take? You just have to press the button once to release the political prisoner into the bear's cage.
Well, you try walking in heels across this whole house instead of just our bedroom.
Shh! Now is not sexy time! Don't talk about sexy time!
Oh, sorry. Why are you so shy? You have the legs for heels.
Darling, I have killed for far less than that.
I don't remember this part of the film.
Must be a bootleg copy. Wait...
Is that Mr. Trump? Oh, what is he?
Oh, long tape! Long tape!
Oh, turn it off! Oh, my eyes are burning!
The remote is not working! Oh, dear God!
Oh, and why is R. Kelly also there? Oh, no! No, Mr. Kelly, no!
A little help, please, darling! Oh, good job. I loosened it first.
Oh, I feel dirty. I need a shower. Actually, never mind.
I'm always mixing up my DVDs. I meant to lend my granddad the Basketball Diaries the other night, and I accidentally lent him the Bukkake Diaries. He still hasn't returned it. Next up tonight, people are talking.
I like your tattoos, Daddy. Why did you get this one?
They're all zodiac images, darling.
I didn't know you were religious.
I'm not. I just love the Zodiac Killer.
You're silly, Daddy.
I know. I love how interested you are in my tattoos, darling.
Who's Jessica Lynn?
Well... Before Daddy met Mommy, Daddy thought he had found the love of his life. It turns out Daddy was naive and Jessica Lynn was a nasty two-timing bitch who broke my heart, stole everything I owned, and became a stripper because she needed more attention.
What about that one, Daddy?
This one? Here by my eye? Well, I got that because I killed someone.
Were you crying?
Oh, yeah. I was definitely crying as I broke his kneecaps, put cigarettes out on him, and then put a bullet in his head. Why did you have to become a fucking snitch? We were brothers. We had it all.
Really?
I'm just kidding. We weren't really brothers. Oh, and this one I got when I joined my first gang, the Tool Time 5. And this one I got when I was doing a hit and run, GTA style. That's Greater Toronto style. It just means you cut people off with a stolen car. And this I got for killing Serbs in the Bosnian War. I wasn't a soldier, I was just good at it.
All right, visiting hours are over. Smith, say goodbye to your daughter.
All right, bye-bye, Amy Wamy. I can't wait to tell you more about my other tattoos next time. This sleeve has a very exciting story, including me, a fire, and a mosque. I'll give you a hint. It has something to do with the swastika on my forehead.
I'd never get a tattoo. I get buyer's remorse buying lunch. Next up tonight, someone shopping.
Welcome to Gypsy's Tipsy Hippie Emporium, where the overpriced clothing pays for my soy lattes and yoga studio membership. What can I help you with?
Yeah, I'm just looking for some jeans. People with too much time and a Yelp account seem to like this place.
Yes, they do! We carry all the best vintage jeans from the most overrated parts of Seattle, Portland, and the former East Berlin.
Right. Well, blue jeans would be great.
Now, would you prefer the effortlessly rugged rips 4.5 centimeters below your pocket, suggesting your cigarette lighter is too big for your tight pants? Or perhaps the post-postmodernist nod to both Victorian English aristocracy and the back alleys of early 2000s Detroit with a pocket watch chain?
Plain normal jeans that suggest I'm an average man who wears trousers would be great.
Wonderful! I have just the thing. Now, these pants are often worn by normal guys. They even conceal a poorly timed erection during an especially erotic slam poetry piece.
Actually, that sounds great. Those jeans aren't even as ironic as I feared.
All of our denim is made locally and sustainably by sociology and poli-sci postgrads who determined making less than minimum wage sewing in their collective housing co-ops was the best way to avoid child sweatshop labor in Southeast Asia. You can almost smell the overdue student loan bills and parental disappointment in the acid wash.
Well, that's comforting. Yeah, I'll buy the pair. How much?
Only $60. But if you're interested in some water-intolerant boots, I can make it $50.
Well, actually, with this weather, I might be swayed to get boots. How about something durable and high quality, but doesn't try to make too much of a fashion statement?
We would never sell that kind of useless drudgery at Gypsy's Tipsy Hippie Emporium. Our clothes are meant for conscientious people who care more about what strangers think of them than senseless practicalities such as dressing for the weather.
Right then. Look, I'll just take the jeans. $60 is fine.
Pleasure doing business with you. And remember, we're the cheapest place in town for buying a personality.
I sometimes wear trendy clothes, but it depends what people leave in their garbage cans. Next up tonight, a couple is bored.
So last week we did the hot wax and the warehouse sex with two other men. This week I was thinking maybe just abnormal sex.
Ugh.
Then we try a new hobby.
What about a warehouse-related hobby?
No, I was thinking a dance class.
Or we could just skip the dance class and blow my brains out.
Fine, you suggest something.
What about, how about hiking?
Walking? You want to make our main hobby walking?
Fine, then what about a cooking class?
There are 1,200 Hungry Man meals and a box of Pizza Pops in my freezer. I'm good. Let's try mixed martial arts.
Jerry, you weigh 90 pounds. You'd be marmalized.
But I've already got the pajamas.
They don't wear gis in MMA.
Oh, forget it then. Let's do horseback riding.
I can't, not with my pelvis. I don't need to have any horse riding instructor see my orgasm face.
Well, pick something.
Why don't we take up drinking?
Yeah, I'd be good at that. My dad was an alcoholic.
I don't drink much. I don't like the taste of water. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. Oh, I wish I could stay in bed with you all day.
Oh, yeah, I'd rather you didn't. You're funking up my sheets, yeah?
Oh, sorry.
Neil!
Shit,
Carl's mum, my ex-lover.
What are you doing in bed with him, you slag?
Oh, piss off, mum.
Now, ladies, calm down. We could all be in bed together.
What, so you can disappoint two women?
You're just saying that because you missed the Neil steal.
You mean the bit where you nicked my welfare check after?
I told you, I was looking after it.
How is spending it on porn and cat food looking after it?
The cat food was for your son. You should be grateful.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna go.
No, don't go. I'll make you breakfast. There's gotta be some cat food left.
Get out of my house, yeah?
It's my house!
Technically, it's the council's house.
Oh, piss off!
Fine, then. Sod you both. Lesbians. Where the feck are you, Carl? I miss you. I haven't punched anything in ages.
Follow the smell.
Is that dog biscuits and BO? It has to be, Carl! Oh, no. Oh, shit, it's a homeless man.
Are you looking for him?
You've seen Carl?
The one who looks like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, but with a perm.
He went in there.
Oh, of course he did. He loves a good kennel. Hello? Anyone in?
Oh, go away. I'm hibernating.
No, you're not. You're clearly masturbating.
Oh, well, hibernating gets pretty boring.
Come on. It's time to go home.
I'm not going home.
Oh, come on. I've cleared all the medical waste out your side of the dumpster.
No, I'm growing up. It's time for me to get my own dumpster. Can't afford it yet, so I'm staying in this kennel for now.
But, we're Carl and Neil. We can't live apart. Who's going to wash my hair?
Oh, just rehire that badger who did it when I was on holiday.
No, it's rubbish. He doesn't rinse it properly. I get all this foam the next day around my mouth.
Well, it's your problem, not mine. I'm buying my own whiskers these days.
How?
Well, it turns out people will give you money if you do stuff for them.
You mean like you nick stuff and then they give you money for it?
No, stuff like cut the grass or wash the windows or kill their husband.
Yeah, but it's a lot of that. Oh, what's the word I'm looking for?
I think it's pronounced work or wouch. Something like that. It's some posh word.
Oh, whatever. Can't be better than working for me.
Remember that day I got stabbed twice by that hooker we tried to con?
Oh, yeah. She was well quicker than I thought she'd be. Must be all the meth.
Well, that was the least worst day I've ever had working for you.
Well, what about the day we went to the beach?
You mean the day I lost my other testicle?
Oh, yeah. Well, I could change. I could get some of that elf and shady.
And pay me?
Well, if you're not going to be reasonable, you can fuck off. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the drunk voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Caitlin Docking, Kenneth Tynan, and Nick Rinker.
Guest writing by Connor Neckleput and Sierra Wiley.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed that. Yeah, that was pretty fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty tight.
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
Pretty drunk.
I may be a little bit biased this time.
Yeah, yes. So Sierra wrote the shop sketch this week.
Was it obvious?
And no points for guessing which one's Connor wrote. The Top Gear one. That was good. It was good. It was very Connor, but it was good. It was good. It worked. Yeah.
Satire, parody, lampoon.
Those are words. Well done, Connor.
Sophisticated elements in all of them.
There's a lot of smut in your sophisticated supposedly sketches. Like,
there really isn't as much as you should be led to believe.
For someone as prudish as you, yeah, it's pretty surprising how sexual your sketches get.
Yeah, we can see where his head's at. A lot
honestly,
of repression there.
Seriously. I just sit down and I think, what would Simon find funny?
Ooh.
Well, so why do you keep sending me these sketches then?
I think you're doing a bit. You're playing me, man. You're giving me all this love. Like, oh, I like this kind of stuff. Please give me more. And then I give you some, and then you're like, oh, it's really good.
No, then I edit. I edit it, which is a thing that happens in writing. It's called being the showrunner, and then you hand me the stuff, and then I edit it, and then we put it out.
Is it the showrunner's job to be disparaging?
No, but it is. It
How about mean?
He's not bitter at all. Let me just say.
It just comes with the job. It's not necessarily my job. It's just inevitable. And it is inevitable that the other writers get butt hurt. Every show ever, that's what happens.
You know what? I feel pretty great.
A great example is on Corner Gas, apparently, one episode, a guy, one of the writers, won a, like, the Juno Award for... Did they move TV stuff at Juno's? Whatever the Canadian TV awards are. Anyway, so he won the award, but the script he submitted that he got, you know, the reason he got his name on it, what had happened was he'd submitted the script, and then they took the whole script and rewrote every single word of it. I guess kept the premise of the story, so hence he gets his writing credit. But because they literally changed every word of it, and he's the one who still got the award.
Would that feel good, or would that make you feel empty? It's very BoJack Horseman winning an Oscar.
No one wins there. Like, he's going to feel like shit, and they're going to feel cheated. So it's just...
Yeah, it's a shitty situation all around.
Yeah, like, who do you thank in that one? Well, thank all the people that did the work. And...
That's very Hollywood, though. I could see that happening a lot.
Well, it's Canadian, so we'd have to say it's very Toronto.
Very North Hollywood. It's okay. All under one system. All
right, anyway. While we work out what word it is, we'll play a song. And, of course, we are coming back with the White Noise after show. So we're going to talk a fair amount of politics, maybe. Not to put anybody off or keep it interesting. But, you know, Obama's leaving, Trump's coming, Trudeau's getting in hot water. There's lots to talk about there. So we'll find something and we'll talk to you very soon. First up is Cosmic Light Shapes. Can you see in 3D? Can you see it in red? Do you see invisible things flying around your head? Did the satellites come for you again? And your last wish before the end? Oh, oh, oh. Whoa, whoa. Again, will it be, oh yeah, All right, there we go. That's Poor Form with July off Pop Alliance Volume 4. Available at CITR.ca and in our studio. I don't know. I'm sure you could buy it at some record stores as well.
You should probably be able to buy it somewhere. Yeah. Bandcamp,
yeah.
iTunes.
Check it out, though. It's a cool collection of awesome sort of local Canadian and independent music. And yeah, before that was Cosmic Light Shapes with Can You See in 3D off Nebula, which is a wicked album. All right, so our first topic for tonight is going to be something a bit closer to home, because we don't talk enough, I think, about Canadian issues.
There's not been any recently.
Well, things have been going pretty smooth since the election, but at least the Conservatives believe that there is something to be made of the fact that Justin Trudeau just went on holiday on the expense of Aga Khan, who's worth $900 million and is a very wealthy man who also gives a lot of money to charity. And so his connection to the Trudeaus is that he's been friends with the family a long time, but he also has a connection to the Canadian government in that he takes money for his charity to be spent from the Canadian government and the Canadian people. So the Conservatives claim this is a conflict of interest in him receiving gifts of attention and holiday time, I guess is what you can classify it as, from Aga Khan. So is this worth getting angry about, or is this just a molehill?
I think we have so many bigger problems to worry about. I think since, like, there have been politicians and there have been leaders, they've been charmed by outside individuals, especially those who are powerful. I don't think you can really look at an example of a political leader and not have examples of those who are trying to kind of buy him out with gifts. Not saying that it's a good thing, but I think that it's going to happen to some extent. And the issue is, like, to how controversial it is. I mean, I don't think being invited on a vacation, like, is that bad, all things considered? It might be warm water that he's getting into, but I don't think it ought to be hot water. I think there are much bigger problems on our hand that we should deal with.
Yeah, because you do have to wonder, well, how is that any different from if he'd sent a gift, which was a, you know, beautiful artifact that was then kept by the Trudeaus, which happens all the time with heads of state. Countries send fancy things, and a lot of the time they couldn't, you know, the leaders personally keep them, and if he's literally just giving him a holiday, like, and it doesn't seem to be, you can't draw a clear connection between that and corruption in terms of personal gain.
No, of course not.
And so it seems to me at least very close to elbow gate in terms of other people yeah. getting upset because they want an excuse to get upset. I don't know, Connor, you've been quiet.
Got nothing to say. Well, no, I mean, like, yeah, you compare it to Elbowgate, and that it's different because, I think he apologized, right? I think it was very incidental. This does have a potential much bigger repercussion, I think, if things were to stem from it. I think
exactly,
for the things were like, tally it down, make a record of it. It's good for people to know. I don't think there's any immediate threat, but, you know, if stuff like this keeps happening, then maybe you go, hey, Justin, seems like you're hanging out with these moguls a bit. Are you sure that you're not being influenced by them and how you're in the country? I think a one-off thing like this, you can overlook. But yeah, just like tally it down.
Yeah, I do think there's value in a democracy, and I think that's the job of the opposition to kind of call out the party in power and, you know, see to what value are they spending the taxpayers' money, to like how noble are they being in their activities. And yeah, definitely important, as you said, Connor, to take note of it, but not to just kind of make a huge scandal out of something that doesn't have to be. If we looked at that money that's given to Aga Khan's charities and taken from Canadian taxpayer money, if that's problematic and that's seen to go to ignoble sources, then perhaps have problem with it. But before that's proven, I don't think it's that problematic.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, let's take a break and then we'll come back. I've got a topic actually quite related to this that I will transition nicely into, but first, let's play some more music. This is Weird Lines, and this is One Fell Swoop.
You knew
There we go. Nice little, it was a bit more mellow than than I was hoping, but that was a good track. It was One Fell Swoop off Weird Lines, by Weird Lines off Sappy Futures Limited. Okay, so our next topic, connected to what we were just talking about. There was a recent report that Canada is ranked lowest among developed countries in giving aid and also in defensive spending.
Is that defensive spending?
Yeah, spending on defense, like, okay, related to NATO, sure, and their own, and on giving foreign aid to countries.
Yes.
And so, yeah, do we feel that that's something that needs to change, or should it stay as it is? What do we think?
I think it's super problematic because Canada has this idea of being this middle power country that's all about its peacekeeping measures. And it's been easy since like the 1960s, 1970s to think of ourselves as this peacekeeping country that has such a positive force in the world. But in reality, we've gone too much on that rhetoric and haven't really followed that up with action. So out of the OECD countries, we're in the lower half. We spend only 0.24% of GDP on foreign aid, when in reality the UN goal is 0.7% of GDP. When you compare it to other countries like the UK, they're way above us, but we still, you know, are saying, oh, Canada, we're so great, we're so great. And then there's evidence that that money is going to charities that give back to Canada. And I was reading a really interesting article on this a couple months ago, I remember, that was saying even the money that we do spend, that lower amount, is going to programs that contribute right back to Canadian pockets.
Right, but you see, I have a bigger issue with just the idea. You know, I don't believe we need to spend more on defense. I think that's ludicrous that we need to spend more money on a war, because, you know, we need to basically be in the mindset that it's not an option. It's not something we do. It's nothing we want to do. It's not even an option. And I don't think we should be spending money on any form of defense, really. I think it's completely ludicrous in this day and age that we believe that we should go to war for anything.
Do you
ever
think that Canada should therefore abolish its military?
I think, basically, you know, besides having, like, forces which are kept for search and rescue, things like that, like, the value of the military, not as a defense, but more as, like, search and rescue and things like that. But let's talk about aid first, actually. Yeah. Let's talk about aid first. So with aid,
For me, my biggest concern is the abuse of what we spend, in that if we're giving aid, we have to be so careful about how we do it and who we do it to, because there's so much corruption that goes on.
Right.
For example, Liberia has like documented examples of where aid was given during their civil wars. And it, because you can't just walk in and give out aid to people, you have to actually hand it over to the government in that country. You can't just walk in there due to the sovereignty laws that exist, and the UN will follow. And so because of that, the money isn't getting to the people, and the aid, it wasn't getting to people. It was actually being kept by the government, sold to pay for more guns and more weapons and drugs, because they could sell drugs to locals who would then obviously buy it and further fund their operation in murdering people. So we are actually helping fund civil war if we're giving aid in those circumstances, and that's the sort of thing that is abhorrent to everybody. And so, but it, you know, it happens far more regularly than it should.
Yeah, and that, you can see that even more in Latin America. All the Latin American countries that were given aid after they had economic crises in the 70s and 80s, it's given with such, what's that word? There's such an agenda behind the foreign aid, and it's like, oh, you know, join the OECD. We want you to be this Western democratic nation. Give up your ideas of socialism. Please install these American-supported conservative military leaders. And then that led to huge human costs all throughout Latin America, some pretty tyrannical governments. And then, yeah, but the thing is, like, how do you give aid and make sure it's going to the best sources it can? Like, do we have any mechanisms of oversight that would help? I mean, charities are under such scrutiny, but it's a real question of what they do with the money.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a complex issue, because there's so many different charities, there's so many ways that you could give aid, and, you know, that you, what it just means, though, is that we need to make sure that any official aid that goes out is going through a channel that has checks and balances to make sure.
Right.
But you have to look at this almost as a case-by-case scenario. There isn't this big overarching solution to it, because it's too complex a problem. But that mindset of looking for the corruption and avoiding that, it's something that just isn't talked about enough. It's just the discussion is just about whether we should give aid or not, but not how we're giving aid, who we're giving aid to, and even then, yeah. And I do think that we have to be, you know, doing too much isn't the solution. I mean, because, you know, England and the UK gives a lot of aid, but I bet if we look at that, we will see that a lot of that aid is conditional, and it's conditional on their support for Britain and its interests around the world. Britain is not a colonial power anymore, but it still plays colonial games and behaves in that fashion. And so, yeah, that aid will come with conditions for sure. What do you think, Connor?
Yeah, I think you guys have hit on a lot of good points. I wonder, it's what official foreign aid here, right, from Canada. I wonder if, therefore, there's a greater propensity for people to donate to charities in more unofficial ways, in ways that don't necessarily, as you said, Simon, go to the governments for them to potentially use in ways they see fit, but perhaps practically in ways that don't.
That's actually a good point, because I have heard that Canadian individuals, when you look at averages, because we're a relatively wealthy country, people are pretty socially engaged and generally aware of what's going on around the world. And so especially there was like a positive per capita response to the Syrian refugee crisis, and a lot of like private donors, shall we say, you know, opened up their homes and were open to sponsoring Syrian refugees. And so that is another way that I didn't really think of, that sort of aid given through an indirect way.
I do think as a country which is a social democracy, we should be giving aid collectively.
Yeah.
And that is something we should do.
To who?
But, you know, to those, you know, those causes around the world that are emergency relief, I think is a good one to, that's pretty, you know, unpolitical, like earthquakes and
sort of non-governmental organizations, like potentially, not that, but perhaps but a UNICEF, but, and whatever, this is, or something like that, or you think like, go, so kind of like China has an earthquake, whatever,
right?
Whatever,
and this,
and then you give it to them.
And I'd give you the same answer I gave to Sierra, which is, well, like, until we look at it case by case,
yeah,
you know, it could be either.
No, there's going to be systemic inefficiencies. That's the case with any system, any sort of bureaucracy. There's going to be holdups, and that's not always going to be helpful. But yeah, you're right, it is case by case basis, and it's hard to do anything more efficiently without compromising legitimacy, perhaps, the efficacy of donating foreign aid.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, the solution would be you'd go to the UN, have a UN resolution that would put forward conditions which meant that, like, people like the Red Cross could go into anywhere in the world if there is a major disaster and there's a state of emergency, then they have the right to go in there and provide aid directly to people. Like, if you have that sort of contingency in effect, then I think, you know, that would be an ideal one. I just don't know if that's even plausible.
And the capacity of the Red Cross and the UN forces is a whole nother thing, right? Their funding to be able to have those relief efforts, the controversy that's present in that. You mean, you looked at the aftermath of the Bosnian War and the UN not getting active early enough. What happened in Rwanda? The UN didn't get involved early enough. They're hesitant to kind of get themselves involved, and there's such a disparity in funding that the UN has to take part in relief efforts. So perhaps, you know, if you could funnel it and have the right amount of oversight in that concentrated body that is the UN, perhaps, or the Red Cross or Médecins Sans Frontières, you could perhaps, you know, get that level of oversight if it's all being funneled into one source, and then you could have positive relief efforts and aid efforts going into that one body.
Yeah. Lots of good answers, lots of good solutions.
You do hope that with the lack of defense spending and the lack of official foreign aid, that most of that money, therefore, is being reinvested back into making Canada a good place for its citizens.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other argument you can make for not spending more, is that, well, let's try and invest in ourselves. We're already in a deficit, so, like, yeah, you know.
There's been a recent sort of financial crisis that Canada's still reeling from. There's always reason to invest in it at home.
Yeah.
You've got to hope that they're doing that and doing it in good ways.
Cool. All right, let's play a song and we'll come back. Next up is Metronomy, and this is Hang Me Out to Dry.
Sleeping in the midday sun, talking about history. Hang me out to dry. Take me for a ride. Do whatever you feel like you're behind the wheel.
There we go. That is Harley Art with Let Me Go. All right, we're back in the studio. We've only got a couple of minutes left. So our last topic for tonight is the fact that President Obama is leaving the White House because apparently a can of Fanta is taking over. So, I thought we should take the moment to discuss whether, what do we think about his 8 years? Was it a success? Was it a failure based on the ideas that he put forward to begin with? And what's his legacy from it?
I think the saddest thing is that he could have such a legacy had Trump not been the one who is elected. And I think that his entire legacy is, well, not its entire, but such a huge part of it is going to be overwritten by having Trump as the follow-up. I think a lot of his values and a lot of the things he stood for throughout his 8 years in office will remain. And I think as we look back on him in history, he's going to be seen as one of the, perhaps if not if one of the best presidents, one of the better ones. I think he was definitely a really good leader.
Definitely one of the least shady ones.
Yeah. So you're saying like squeaky clean last week, right?
Quite.
Yeah. And when I think about his stance on the environment and everything he did for environmental protection, or some of his, like what he did with Cuba, like a lot of impressive things he did. And I just hope that it's not all overridden in the next 4 to 8 years. Like, God, I hope it's not 8.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do sympathize with the fact that for 6 years of his presidency, he didn't have much control in the Senate and has representatives. Yeah. But I think they did in the first 2 years. Like they had a majority in both houses, so they could have perhaps done more then. You'd think, you know, obviously like total gridlock in the last few years, there was nothing you could do. But there was a lot of stuff. I mean, even the Healthcare Act. When we originally were talking about that, they were talking about universal healthcare on the same standards as Canada and the UK. And what we ended up with was, this is a true story, what we ended up with was Mitt Romney's idea that came up with when he was running against Obama. I'm not joking. That was Mitt Romney's plan, was this. You could buy insurance across areas and you'd have protection against existing conditions. But basically, yeah, Obamacare should have been called Romney Care, because that's what it was. It was the Republicans' idea.
Because that's the only thing that would get through Congress.
Pardon?
That's the only thing that would get through Congress.
Well, that's why it got through in the end, yeah. But they still acted like it was the worst thing they'd ever heard of, and it was their idea.
Yeah. Oh, it's classic bipartisan politics, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the sad thing about American politics and the nature of that two-party system with the Congress and the Senate, because you're going to have a president who's not necessarily of the same party of the majority in Congress and the Senate, and I don't understand how they can get anything done, because by nature all the senators and congressmen are going to oppose them if it's from a different party. And that's why in a parliamentary system where you have the prime minister being a leader from that party who's got the majority, I just don't, yeah, it just makes more, so much more sense to me. And it's kind of sad that a good leader will have to be taken so far back by having those limitations.
But that's the point, is to protect us when we have Trumps, is so that they can't do horrendous,
that was the point of the Electoral College,
and chaotic things. Well, that didn't work, did it?
No.
So
what do you guys think his legacy will be?
I think he did it's funny because things happened during his presidency that were great, but not necessarily on behalf of him. For example, gay marriage being legalized was a Supreme Court issue, and therefore really, you know, he was cheering for it when it happened, but you can't give him the credit for it. Same can be said for killing Bin Laden. As much as he tried to take credit for that, and I don't blame him, because the Republicans would have if that was just fair enough, you know.
You could always argue, make the case that he could have, if he was a very, very far left-leaning, or like, abandoned the entire chase and tried to refocus America on not inciting terrorism. At least he went along with sort of the neoliberal idea of pursuing him and taking him down. But yeah, it wasn't really his efforts. It's just that someone else in his shoes probably could have made the situation different, that it would never have happened.
Yeah, but I think even Sanders would have done it. Like, I don't see anybody,
Maybe.
I'd be surprised if they wouldn't have done it, because they just, it's in America, that'd be political suicide to say no to it.
Do you think there will be negative aspects of his legacy left behind? For example, like drone strikes going up?
No, because in terms of, there's a precedent there for him. A precedent for every other leader having committed atrocities. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't have to sacrifice American lives for it. This is not my opinion, but this is like the objective idea of like comparing him to other presidents. No, actually, like, he didn't do anything worse than they did.
To critique him, you could say, that wasn't a cool move. You could definitely make the case that he rescued less American lives, and there's a big debate to be had about that.
Yeah, I don't agree with it.
You could critique him and say that he did too many drone strikes, too much interference. But as to your point, if you compare him against other leaders, he probably doesn't measure up too badly in all seriousness.
Yeah, I mean, he ended two wars and, you know, avoided at least or outright going into another civil war
America was about to enter a civil
war. Well, Syria, they could potentially have like gone in, troops on the ground. Full blown.
He tried to make reconciliation efforts with Iran as well. I mean, a lot of people.
Yeah,
critique that. A lot of the Republicans are really afraid of that. Perhaps a good reason, perhaps for not. I think, you know, you can't keep backing someone into a corner, otherwise, eventually they'll lash out. Which is what we've been doing with Iran. Same with Cuba. He opened up relations again with Cuba. So I think his legacy, because it was so tricky to pass various legislations and pass stuff that wasn't even really his idea, I think he'll go down as a very well-respected statesman. I think he was impeccable. He was an immaculate speaker and presenter. He identified things with a brilliant nuance and...
decorum.
Yeah.
He has such integrity and such... you actually got the impression that he cared genuinely about the people who are hurt by shootings. Not that you ever think that someone doesn't, but when, you know, it's the president's role to go out there and have the formal apology, I think that you really felt that he was genuine in that. And every time he came on and he had this really powerful way of speaking, you felt like there was an emotional connection. Or at least I did, as someone who supported him.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I think his reputation outside of the US will be actually better than it'll ever
inside.
In the long term, he probably will be seen as someone who tried at least to push things in the right direction, and, you know, due to the limitations of his power, he couldn't do everything he wanted to do. I mean, there's a few things about him that I would be curious to see if he becomes a bit more honest about post-presidency, which is things there's things he said in the past that make me think that perhaps he is agnostic or an atheist and not as religious as...
He definitely didn't play it up very much.
No, I get the feeling that is... Because, you know, you do have to pay a little lip service there to be the president. You can't be an atheist president.
Yeah.
There's never been one. And there may be one in the future, but... no one's putting it on their campaign slogan for sure.
How about you, Simon? When you're running for president, will that be up front center?
Hey, everyone, I'm an atheist. Vote for me.
Oh God, but who would run? Who in their right mind would run to lead any country? Like, you're a
terrible
masochist.
Idea.
You're either an asshole or a masochist. That's the only reason you run. I don't know. I did think that being like a mayor wouldn't be too bad. Like,
what, mayor of your house?
Of a city, perhaps, you know, like just
small
throwing
city,
it out
like
there.
500 people.
Simon just wants to start a juice company and start biking around
God,
everywhere.
No. Oh, God. Jeez, shoot me if I do that. Jesus.
Sheep you?
Shoot me, Simon.
Oh.
Shoot me. No, sheep me.
Shave before you
shove
wool.
A sheep up my ass if I get to the point where I'm doing that. Actually, I mean, that's probably
duly noted.
Fair
yeah,
game.
We'll make sure to follow through on that one.
Okay, on that note, that's the end of our show. Okay, guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Simon.
No worries.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
We will be back next week with some more stuff, definitely, as now I'm unemployed, so I've got lots of time to write.
Wait, so we're not going to have a best of episode, is that what you're saying?
No, it's going to be some fresh shit next week, I promise it. All right, we'll see you then.